That feeling comes with a phone call you didn't expect.
That feeling as the news sinks in.
About the surprise diagnosis or the financial curveball. And in that moment, it's hard not to feel alone.
To wonder how you're going to deal with it all.
Be encouraged today. You don't have to go through it alone.
There's a whole community of friends ready to encourage you and pray for your situation. It's called PrayerWorks.
An online, completely anonymous source of inspiration and hope.
Find PrayerWorks at myfaithradio.com.
He's a psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
And welcome. It is so great to have you on this Saturday. Fall, I just love fall. I don't know about you, but I'm just an autumn kind of guy. Especially, I just love the colors in our part of the country. Hopefully, you've got some color in your neighborhood this week. But, man, oh, man, I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving. Our family is getting ready to decorate the house, and just fall is just a wonderful time of year. And, you know, it's also the time that I celebrate my birthday, so maybe that's one of the reasons why I like it so much. We are just so thankful that you joined us today here on the Faith Radio Network. Got a great program lined up for you today. The first hour, we're going to be talking about words that hurt. And, man, oh, man, so many of us have been hurt by somebody else's words, whether that is gossip or criticism. And we're going to be talking to an expert who's written a fantastic new book on that topic, which I think you'll find tremendously helpful. And then in the second hour, we're going to take a very close look at Israel and how, unfortunately, in recent years, there has been a lot of maybe misinformation about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. And we'll be diving into that issue as well. So stick with us. We always start off with a few faith and culture-related stories on the program, and found an interesting new study out. If you've got preschoolers at home, and I know we have listeners that have very young kids, if you're a mom or a dad of a preschooler and you want your preschooler to learn more, make sure they get a nap. Yeah, according to a new research, naps are a critical part of a preschooler's day, even though more and more preschools now are adding additional curriculum to their programs. The research was done at the University of Massachusetts, and they found that kids who took hour-long naps performed better on memory tests than kids who didn't take a nap. In addition, the non-nappers could not make up the deficit just by getting more sleep at night. They really needed that afternoon nap. Dr. Rebecca Spencer is the lead researcher in the study, and she says, with increased curriculum demands, classroom nap time is becoming devalued. These kids are in the process of growing from babies who slept off and on all day to children who sleep primarily at night. And Dr. Spencer says this new study provides evidence that midday naps for preschoolers support learning and help to improve academic achievement. Isn't that fascinating? They looked at 40 kids from six different preschools, ages 3 to 5 and a half. They taught the kids a memory test in which they were asked to remember where various pictures were located on a grid. And every child played the game without a nap and then after a nap, and then they played it the following day. Well, right after the nap, they didn't find much difference based on the sleeping time. But later in the afternoon, the kids who had had a nap recalled 10% more of the picture locations, and the benefit remained the next day. So a real seems like a real clear link between naps and memory, at least in these kids. And, you know, I've been misplacing my car keys a lot lately, so maybe I need a nap. We also receive emails here at Faith Radio, and I wanted to read one to you. This one comes from Kim. Kim listens to us in Madison, Wisconsin, and she says, "Dear Dr. Bill, my daughter started fourth grade this year. She typically gets straight A's, but one subject she really struggles with is math. We spend a great deal of time helping her because she forgets things easily and doesn't seem to understand simple math problems like how many pennies are in a dime or how many minutes are in a half hour. My daughter prays about this all the time, and she never complains about doing extra math problems at home. And my husband is very patient with her, but it is becoming stressful for all of us. What should we do? Well, Kim, given the fact that your daughter does well in all of her subjects except math, there is a possibility that she may have a learning disability. There's a learning disability called dyscalculia. It's also referred to as mathematics disorder, and it can involve a couple of things. Kid has trouble understanding mathematical terms or concepts, or decoding written problems, board problems, recognizing numerical symbols or arithmetic signs, or following sequences of mathematical steps. Now, that is the official learning disability diagnosis, dyscalculia. If your daughter is seriously lagging behind in math, what I would do is ask the teacher to arrange for a formal evaluation by the school psychologist. Hopefully your district has one. Oftentimes they rove between different campuses, and they can give her a test to see if indeed she does have a learning disability. If she doesn't, and it's simply a matter of needing additional help, what I would do is find a math tutor or enroll your daughter in one of those specialized math learning programs. There are several commercial programs now that are actually very good in many communities around the country. Now, since you've said this is putting a lot of stress on your family, I think it's really better to seek outside help rather than trying to tutor your daughter yourself. And let me just point one other thing out. It's really important, given this has become so stressful, and especially I'm sure your daughter is just, you know, maybe her self-esteem is taking a hit. You really need to affirm and encourage her strengths rather than focusing on her weaknesses, because she's probably focusing on math as a real weakness in her life right now. Help her to learn, help her to view learning math as maybe an energizing challenge instead of a frustrating obstacle. And I know that'll take some effort on your part, but maybe, you know, really work at saying this. Yeah, we know it's struggle, but, you know, won't it be exciting when we learn how to do fractions or whatever it might be. Work closely with your daughter's math teacher and make sure you are praising her effort rather than simply her achievement. Well, a lot of us parents tend to fall into that, just appraising achievement. And also avoid the tendency to criticize her or express disappointment when she fails. Remind her that her self-worth is not based on grades, it's not based on accomplishments, but it's based on the fact that she is made in God's image and that he dearly loves her. And that you love her regardless of whether she does well in math. I mean, we'd all like to see our kids succeed academically, but she needs to know that you love her unconditionally. So I pray that's helpful to you, Kim. If you have an email question for us about marriage, parenting, family issues, faith and culture, we'd love to hear from you. Go to our website, myfaithradio.com. Look for the contact link and shoot me an email. We'll do our best to respond to it. Well, it's 12 past the hour. I'm Bill Meyer. This is the Faith Radio Network. Coming up, how do we stop the words that hurt in our life? And how do we stop from using words that hurt others? We're going to talk to an author who's written a great new book on that coming up on the Faith Radio Network.
There are some methods practiced in speech therapy that can be used very effectively by parents to help develop their normal child's speech and vocabulary patterns.
For Family Talk, here's Dr. James Dobson.
One simple method is called turn-taking. Normally, when we adults communicate with our children, we take about 15 turns for every one the child gets. But dialogue means taking turns. So for the very young child especially, it helps to slow down and take one turn at a time. He smiles, you smile. He pushes the toy car, you push the car. He says one word, you respond with one word. This teaches give and take and gives the child's mouth time to catch up with his or her brains. To build on this concept, speech therapist Karen Culhane suggests that we use a method called expansion. When your child is at a single word stage, you respond with two words. He says cow, you say big cow. Or he says cow eat, and you say cow eating. By taking them one simple step at a time, you give the child an opportunity to develop and practice each skill. Simple methods such as these can help slowly developing children quickly get up to speed. Now, that's not to say that parents shouldn't also use normal adult conversation with their children. That's very important, too, for the child and for the parent. But there are times when it's good to slow down and talk on the child's level of development and understanding.
Hear more at MyFamilyTalk.com.
It's Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
And you can join the conversation by giving us a call, and the phone number is 877-93-FAITH. 877-93-FAITH. And if you call us this hour, give us your contact info, name, address, phone number, email address. We will enter you into a drawing. At the end of the hour, we have three copies of the book written by this hour's guest, and we'll be giving those away. So by all means, give us a buzz, 877-93-FAITH. Well, from the evening news and our favorite TV shows to friends' Facebook statuses and office gossip, there really is hardly a day that goes by that we don't come into contact with some kind of negative language in our life. The issue is not whether we can avoid hurtful words, but how we respond to them. And this hour's guest is an expert in that topic. His name is Dr. Michael Sedler. Mike ministers in churches and provides consultation services to schools and businesses throughout the country. He is the author of When to Speak Up and When to Shut Up. That's his previous book. He works as an adjunct professor for three universities. He also wrote a book called Stop the Runaway Conversation. And today he joins us to talk about his brand new book, Stopping Words That Hurt, Positive Words in a World Gone Negative. And Mike, welcome to Faith Radio.
Great to be here.
So great to have you. And I understand you are from Spokane, Washington. Is that true?
That's correct. Up in the
north. I love that city. I've been to Spokane. I had a friend who pastored there and lived in Seattle for a couple of years. He used to try to get out of the fog and the mist and go over to the sunshine of eastern Washington.
Exactly. So, for your listeners, we are not the place in Washington that gets all the rain.
That's right.
We get the four seasons and quite a bit of snow, and the leaves are going to start turning real soon. So,
well, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. Thanks for spending part of your Saturday with us. And before we talk about your new book, I would love to let our audience know a bit about When to Speak Up and When to Shut Up. That is a great title, by the way.
Well, you know, yeah, it is. I'm not taking credit for it. The publisher, the editors, they in their brainstorming sessions came up with that particular title, and I love it too. I agree.
Now, can you tell us why that is such an important skill in today's world?
Well, it's the concept of it came about as I looked at how many times people would say, I wished I would have said something, or the other is, I wished I wouldn't have said anything. And I realize so often in the area of communication that is such a huge piece. And so as I began to look through the Bible, I realized that there's tremendous illustrations given to us of times that people spoke up to defend their own lives, to defend the rights of people around them, to even speak up about God. On the other hand, there were times that they were silent. Even in the midst, Jesus is a great example. Even as he stood before the courts, he said nothing. And I began to explore that, and I realized that as we relate to one another in life, it's so critical that we are sensitive and understanding and recognize the timing of when we should be speaking up. And that's what the book talks about.
Now, one of the biblical examples you used, which I really like, is the story of David and Goliath in the Old Testament. Tell us how David knew when to speak up and when to shut up.
That is a great story because it's one that really everyone knows, even individuals that would not consider themselves to be believers or of the faith. They know the story. And, you know, David came to this place where he came to the front lines, and we won't go into the whole story. Your audience can read it. But he gets to the front lines where his brothers and the other workers are there, and he actually came to serve them, to bring them food and to help them. But they began to chastise him and come against him and say he was a glory seeker. And it was very interesting because David actually was very quiet at that time. He didn't come against them. He didn't argue with them. he actually listened and began to talk to them about who is this Goliath that would come against the people of Israel. And through that, we begin to see David's leadership skills, even at a very young age. And so I use that as an example of how we really can have that that kingly presence, even in a very young time of our lives, by recognizing that there are times we just need to sit and talk with people and not defend ourselves.
Mm. How can we apply that to parenting? We have a lot of parents who listen to this program, and I actually have three young kids myself, and I'm working on it, Mike. I'm working on when to shut up, because I'm real good at the speaking up with my kids. What are some applications for a parent?
Well, I have three children myself, so I understand that, and I think too often we are so bent on trying to get our point of view across, Bill, that what we believe is more important than what the other person believes, or we believe that they just would understand what we were saying, then they would agree with us. And I think that's a lot of even as parents is recognizing that we're there for guidance, we're there for instruction, but at the same time we have an individual in front of us, regardless of age, that has a brain that's working, and it's important to allow them to talk and to share and help them process. And probably the phrase I use a lot with parents that I work with is, I want to help children learn self-management and self-responsibility. If we as the adult are always the ones that are managing them and guiding their responsibility, how are they ever going to learn?
Mm-hmm. I have a 10-year-old son who is a pretty bright little guy, but he right now, it's very important for him to be right. And he has two younger sisters who are 8 and 6, and this morning we were driving in the car, and his 6-year-old sister was insisting that at their school there is a secret second floor, because she supposedly saw a stairway that goes up. This is a one-story building. She saw the stairway that supposedly goes up to this secret second floor, and she's convinced, as are several of her friends, that there is a secret teacher's lounge up there. And my son knows very well that there is no second floor in this school, and he is just going on and on about how she's wrong, and it's, you know, the facts are off. And finally I said to him, I said, you know, honey, you're just not going to be able to convince her until, you know, somebody takes her up there. But he just had to keep camping on that. I know what's right. And I stopped for a minute and I thought, that's just a lot like dear old dad.
We all know that one, Bill. You're not alone. Yeah.
Oh man, I'm working on it. Pray for me, brother. I tell you.
You got it. And that's where the book, the encapsulized the book portion is. It's helping us not to be defensive. It's helping us. How do we approach people if we disagree with them? How can we disagree with our supervisors without coming against them? It's a communication book on working with people.
Hmm. All right, well, let's dive into the second book, or I guess it's the third book now, and it's called Stopping Words That Hurt, Positive Words in a World Gone Negative. Let's first of all talk about the culture that we live in, because, man, it is so negative out there. There's just so much animosity. I'm not just talking about politics, and politics is a great example, but you just look at all the stuff on the Internet and on social networking and people's tweets, and it's ugly, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah, sir. It's awful. It really is. And then people get in these battles, like you said, on Twitter, where they're going back and forth and tweeting each other, and it's absurd. But our culture is now set up, for whatever reason, we've evolved to this, or devolved, I guess, to the point to where we feel it's important to uncover and expose people as much as possible to show who they really are. And unfortunately, our reality TV shows are a part of that, and people are willingly stepping into the roles on reality TV and showing who they are to millions and millions of people, and what they're showing is not very good. But that only, I think, enhances the thought process of people of it's okay to go ahead and to devalue a human being.
There's a Christian youth culture expert named Walter Mueller. I don't know if you've heard of him, but one of the things that he is been saying a lot lately, referring to our culture, and I think the most recent example was the video game Grand Theft Auto 5, I think, just came out, and it made something like $80 million in the first day of sales. Wow. That particular series, as you may know, is very violent and profane, and it's just had a lot of real negative stuff in it. But this particular one, This new one features a fairly graphic torture scene, and the person playing the game gains more points by inflicting, worse torture on the victim. And Mueller's comment was that culture both reflects and guides a population. And it reflects, our population, the amount of violence that we see in our society is, off the charts. But he also says that you've got young people who are playing the games like these, and that is, in effect, guiding their behavior and showing them what you should do. Reality TV shows, he just mentioned a moment ago, how many of our young people take their cue on what relationships are supposed to look like from reality TV?
Right.
And so how do we combat that? I guess, let's just start there, because I know that's a bigger cultural issue. We're going to get into the more specifics of how we deal with negative conversation. But what is your thought, just as an author, a speaker, a consultant? Is there a role for each of us as individual Christians, and maybe on a whole, a role for the church to start to take back the culture? And if so, how do we do it?
Yeah, wow. We'll talk about that over the next how many years?
I'm sorry, that was a big loaded question.
No, it's a huge issue, and I think individually we feel this an obligation. And maybe that's where we start, Bill. I think individually to begin to how we treat each other, how we model to each other, what we're willing to be a part of, conversations, businesses, relationships. How do we model through all those areas of how we relate to people? But it's a huge issue, and I think even the church, the church as a whole, probably needs to begin to further investigate what we can do to be more of a light to counteract some of those areas, because you couldn't have said it better. It's a very difficult thing, and I know we see our children growing up in this society and our grandchildren growing up in this society, and we shake our heads and think, where is it going to stop?
Yeah, and where is it going to stop? Because, you hear many cultural experts saying, we're starting to look like Rome in the last days, where, the latest, greatest oddity or disgusting behavior is held up as virtuous. I'm thinking of, and I hate to focus on her, but I'm thinking of, Miley Cyrus with that performance recently in the MTV Music Awards, and how many in the entertainment industry, now there were some that criticized her, but many just praising her and, glorifying her and what a risk she took and how bold she was. And she's moved from girl to woman. It's like, oh, please. Our 16-year-old daughters, who grew up with Hannah Montana, are watching their role models show them how it's done. And I sometimes just feel like we are salmon swimming upstream, Mike, and all the other salmon are coming down, bonking us on the head. And what do we do? I mean, does the church? Do you think that pastors? I don't want to speak for pastors, because that they've got a tough one of the toughest jobs in the world as it is, but do they need to play more of a prophetic voice in challenging their congregations on some of these issues?
Well, I certainly think so. I enjoy my leaders and my pastors and places I've gone over the years. I enjoy them challenging my thinking. I don't think we need to be comfortable. What we do individually, obviously, we need to make a decision on, but I do think it's important that we speak into one another's lives and challenge one another. I heard it said some years ago, and I don't know who actually said this, but I'm sure it was one of the people that maybe even you would know. They said that what one generation looks at as moderation moves into excess in the next generation. That's what's happened. We look at one setting, we moderate it to moderation, but the next generation takes that and moves it to excess. I grew up with that in the 60s and went to an excess, and I think that just keeps happening. And somewhere I do believe that we as a church and the church leaders, but we in the church and families need to start going back to a place of saying, where's the line? We need to start drawing the line.
And you talked earlier about the example that we set, I think even in our own neighborhoods, on the job, in our schools. If we start representing Christ and being individuals that are loving and winsome and certainly speaking the truth, but always doing it in love, we're going to start setting a different example for people. And you would hope that our young people would eventually get tired of the negativity and the gross out stuff and start to say, there's part of us, I think, as human beings. Of course, the sin nature steers us that direction. But I also think the part of us, you know, the fact that we're made in God's image causes us to say, I want something better. I want something more. And perhaps there will come a time when there's a hunger for that among our young people. Maybe we're even starting to see a little bit of that change now. We've got a break coming up here, Mike, and I want to tell folks your website. Is it michaelsedler.com?
Correct.
Okay, so michaelsedler, SEDLER.com. You can learn more about Michael and his books. We're going to dive into his new book in just a moment. It's called Stopping Words That Hurt, Positive Words in a World Gone Negative, and give you some practical help on how you respond when someone in your life is attacking or gossiping and how we help keep from doing that ourselves. That's coming up here on the Faith Radio Network. Stick with us.
And thank you for sharing your story on the Faith Radio Faith Line.
Continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
And we'd love to say thanks to our friends who are listening in the Fargo-Moorhead area today on Faith 1200. If you're listening in Waterloo, Iowa on Faith 1090, or on Faith 1270 in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Thanks for making us part of your weekend. And thanks to all of our great listeners who made a gift during our recent share event. Wow, we were just blown away by the generosity of the Faith Radio audience. I know I was talking to Dick Whitworth, who oversees Faith Radio, and Neil Stavem, our program director, and they were just so humbled by the response. And so if you were one of those folks that gave during the share event, thank you. You make it possible for us to keep Bible-centered programming on the air on a daily basis. And if you didn't hear the share event and you're wondering, what is he talking about? Well, we're a non-commercial network. We don't play commercials here. You may have noticed that. And therefore, we depend on support. And if you're a person who's been helped by Faith Radio, if you listen to the Bible teaching on this network Monday through Friday, some of the finest Bible teachers in the world, if that means something to you, we would ask you to prayerfully consider maybe making a one-time gift or an ongoing monthly gift to Faith Radio to help us stay on the air. We really appreciate, again, all of the folks who came to the fore during the share event. Well, our guest this hour is Dr. Michael Sedler, and Michael ministers in churches and provides consultation services to schools and businesses throughout the U.S. He's the author of several different books, Stop the Runaway Conversation, When to Speak Up and When to Shut Up, and he works as an adjunct professor for three different universities. Today he's joining us to talk about his new book, Stopping Words That Hurt, Positive Words in a World Gone Negative. Michael, we talked about the culture that we live in and where we're at, and we could, you know, decry that all day long, but let's maybe get into some of the brass tacks of negative conversation. One of the things that you really focus on in this book is how dangerous it is for us to listen to negative conversation. And this is related to gossip, but even if we're not actively gossiping, by listening to that conversation, talk about what it does to us as a person and how it then impacts others.
I found this out initially, Bill, when it really became aware to me, as I worked in the schools for many years as a teacher and as a special ed director in other areas, and went on later to be a pastor. But I saw in the schools how easy it was for us as educators to begin to talk about a child, and all of a sudden negative things were being said. And I found myself, before I ever even had this kid in my classroom, had already had a perspective. And I realized how dangerous that was, because it fulfilled that, what they call that self-fulfilling prophecy. Mm. And I find that my focusing on this area of listening to negative conversations is how, by just hearing words, by simply hearing negative things and perspectives, it taints my perspective. It creates a judgment within me, and I've already made a decision prior to having really any impact about meeting someone or understanding the whole situation. And so I, the more I checked into it, the more I looked in, I realized gossip is really a cornerstone for many breakdowns in relationships.
One of the places we see this most clearly is the workplace. Let's focus on that for a few minutes.
Okay.
What happens when you have a company where that that negative conversation is going on between employees? Let's say they're bad-mouthing management. Can you believe the boss did this? Can you believe this policy? And I'm speaking from personal experience because I've been in workplaces where I have had colleagues that have engaged in that, and I've listened, and I maybe even have gone, yeah, you're right, boy, it is bad. And what should a person do if they are in a workplace and their colleagues are engaging in that kind of conversation?
Well, we all can relate to that, and I think that's why this topic is so valuable, in that there isn't any of us that haven't been in a situation where we've had that happen, just what you explained, or we've been the ones that have been speaking. So what I encourage people to do in those types of settings, I, in my book, in several different chapters, I discuss specific phrases you can use and ways you can go about it. But one of the things that I do is, if possible, I sometimes even remove myself. I've been in office lounges or teachers' rooms, et cetera, and sometimes I've just gotten up and, you know, and left the room because I need to move away from that. There's other times I've spoken to people and said things like, you know, have you talked to that person directly? I mean, sort of a Matthew 18 process. You know, if something's going on with somebody else, why don't you confront them directly? And so I try to give as much encouragement and guidance in those areas that's appropriate. And in the work setting, I think there's times when you hear things that are negative, you can come back with something positive. If someone's speaking negative of your supervisor or boss and you have a different perspective, you certainly can say, gosh, that sounds like an awful situation. That sounds like a difficult situation. I know for me, I personally haven't had that experience with our supervisor. That one sounds difficult. Have you talked to them personally to see if you can work that through with them? I think there's ways we can do that to come across as non-judgmental, as supportive and encouraging, but also instructive.
What does it do to us, even if we don't engage, even if we don't agree with that person or those people that are engaging in that? What does it start to do to our own psyche as we hear that constant negative chatter?
That barrage, I think, literally taints our perspective towards character assassination. I mean, we just get this perspective of a person that's so tainted and so impure. You mentioned my other book, When to Speak Up. I talk about that in there, about the dangers of silence. And in the book Stopping Words That Hurt, the danger of silence is simply being silent is not going to change things. You're still going to hear it. And that's why in this book I emphasize not so much the person who gossips, but I emphasize the dangers of listening to the information. And then how we can work with the person that is also the gossip. But I just find that as we hear things, Bill, you know how it is. If I start talking negative about a mutual person that we know, pretty soon you're going to start having those things in your mind, wondering, boy, does he really do that? Or, oh, yeah, I guess he does do that. And I just find that pretty soon we are, like I said, we're just moving towards character assassination with no redemptive factors.
Mm. Now, is there a difference between that kind of negative gossip and accurate descriptions of what's going on? Because sometimes it can be negative. Sometimes you can have, let's say, a manipulative, controlling boss or an HR director who's not treating people fairly or whatever it is. You shouldn't just ignore that. But what happens if the employees, and I know you consult businesses, so what do you do when you feel kind of powerless and everybody kind of agrees there is a big problem, but no one's responding to it? Do you just get out of there?
What do you do? I think the key has to do with really what Charles Swindoll says, and that's our attitude. I think it depends on what the purpose is. I'm just going to give a couple biblical examples. For instance, when the Pharisees turned to Jesus and they would say something like, you know, well, you're not supposed to heal on the Sabbath. Well, they were correct. That's what those laws of those days said, that you're not to heal on the Sabbath. And so when they would say things like, well, why are you eating with sinners? You're not to eat with sinners. Well, that was true. Those were the laws of the day. They were saying things that were accurate. So So just because we're saying something that's accurate, does that make it okay? Well, we know that from that area, Jesus constantly confronted the Pharisees. It had nothing to do with the content of what they were saying. We all know it had to do with what? Their attitude. Their intent was to try to destroy Jesus and bring him down. And so I would say that if somebody's saying, sharing some things and they're accurate, that doesn't mean it can't be gossip. That doesn't mean it can't be negative. It doesn't mean it can't be, as the Bible says, an evil report. Because it's true doesn't make it okay. My question is, what is your purpose in sharing it? So going back to your example, Bill, in the workplace, my comment or thoughts would be, okay, if this is all true and this is happening with HR, this is happening with my supervisor, what can we do to restore the situation? Do we need to have a meeting? Do we need to sit down and discuss an action plan? What is it that we need to do? We need to do some corrective action organization. My hope would be that we can find some restorative value, because that is the heart of that we should have as Christians, is to try to restore and be redemptive.
Well, I'm so glad you said that. And that is one of our callings and what sets us apart from the world. So let's look at some of those specific phrases we might use. So we walk into the employee lounge, or we walk into the cafeteria, wherever it might be, and we sit down with a group of our coworkers, and they just start ripping somebody up for, you know, what maybe it's even true. Maybe the person's the supervisor, the boss, the VP, whoever it is, does engage in some things that are not right. But what are some specific things that we can say that will maybe stem that tide?
Well, one of the things that I use, and I mentioned just a moment ago, one of the things I'll often ask the person as they share is like, and again, I empathize with them, and I let them know, boy, that sounds like a difficult situation, but then I will come in and say, have you had a chance to talk to that person personally about that? And sometimes they'll come back and say, well, yes, and they didn't listen. And then I come back with, you know, that makes it hard. You know, if you'd like, I'd be glad to sit down with you and we can talk about maybe another approach. Or I've used a certain approach that's worked sometimes. Sometimes I've even offered a good, where they say, well, if I went, they wouldn't listen to me. I said, would it be helpful if someone went with you? Because I'd be glad to go. I sometimes will offer that. Sometimes I'm in situations, Bill, where people begin to talk about someone that I know, and I have a different leaning, a different inkling toward that person. And I just let them know, and I just say, you know, so-and-so is my friend, or, you know, I know so-and-so in a little different situation than you do, and I'm a little uncomfortable talking about that person when they're not here. And if the person responds with, you know, well, that's too bad, then it's like, well, you know, maybe I just need to leave, and I've done that. Or oftentimes people are more sensitive, and when you say that, they just say, well, I know, I'm just frustrated, and they move on. So I think we can let them know that you know, the person's not there, that's talking behind their back. I think that's something that we need to evaluate. I also think another question I ask people when they begin to share things, I'm amazed at how often people share things that they really don't have firsthand knowledge of. They've heard it from somebody else, and I'll even ask that when they share it. Sometimes they'll say, you know, this sounds like something you might have heard from somebody else. Were you there when this happened, or did you see this happen, or did you hear this from somebody else? And oftentimes it's a matter of, well, no, I heard it happen to so-and-so. And that's when I can say things like, you know, it may have happened that way, but you know how it is. There's two sides to every story. And then I just sort of leave that out in the open. And so I try to help, again, in loving, caring, compassionate, non-judgmental ways. When I'm in those situations, I try to use phrases that will get people to stop a moment and think, because I find most people, not everybody, but most people do not want to be negative. Most people aren't trying to hurt people. They're just frustrated, they're emotionally charged, and they're using their emotions to share things, and I think it just gives them a chance to think a little bit.
Great comments there, Michael. And we're going to take a quick break, but I want to then on the other side, we'll talk about maybe how we apply this in the church, because that's a place where, unfortunately, a lot of this destructive talk can go on and really wound people deeply. This is the Faith Radio Network. It's 11:43. My guest is Dr. Michael Sedler. He's the author of Stopping Words That Hurt, Positive Words in a World Gone Negative. You can learn about him at michaelsedler.com, S-E-D-L-E-R. Give us a call if you'd like to get into that drawing for one of Michael's books. 877-93-FAITH is the number, and we'll take a quick break and be right back here on the Faith Radio Network.
It's one of those things you care so deeply about, you just can't shake it. At University of Northwestern, St. Paul, that thing for us is your student's purpose.
They're not a face in the crowd. They're unique, with a unique calling. And it's our passion and goal to help them find it and pursue it with the highest level of excellence, both academically and spiritually. Learn more at our new website, unwsp.edu.
University of Northwestern, St. Paul. Your life on purpose.
When you support Faith Radio's messages of hope through relevant Bible preaching and family-focused teaching, you impact lives for eternity. If you weren't a part of our Fall Share campaign back in September, please consider joining us now. Your ongoing monthly gift will ensure that lives are changed all across the Upper Midwest. You can give simply and safely online at our website, myfaithradio.com. That's myfaithradio.com. Thank you.
Now, back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
And welcome back. Our website is myfaithradio.com, myfaithradio.com. You can find the entire program schedule for the weekends and for Monday through Friday. And gracious, we have some great programming. My friend Neil Stavem with his show Connecting Faith, Monday through Friday at 12 noon. Susie Larson's Live the Promise at 3 every day. And then, of course, all the great Bible teaching. If you have not checked out the schedule, go to myfaithradio.com today and look at some of the pastors and teachers that we feature on our weekday shows. You'll really be amazed, and you will be edified. You will grow as a believer. You will learn to be a better witness. You'll learn things like Christian worldview and apologetics. Just some great stuff Monday through Friday here on the Faith Radio Network. And we hope you enjoy the weekend programming as well. And, of course, we'd love to get your comments at myfaithradio.com. My guest this hour, Dr. Michael Sedler, the author of Stopping Words That Hurt, Positive Words in a World Gone Negative. Mike, we're talking about the workplace a few minutes ago and what we do when we have colleagues that are maybe talking down a supervisor or one of our coworkers and how we best respond. Let's turn to the church for a moment. And you've served as a pastor, and my goodness, I've been in some churches where people just seem to be aiming their rifles figuratively at the church leadership, and it just comes out in some real nasty ways. What do we do to head that off at the pass?
Yeah, you're right. That's so painful, really, because we look in those situations, and I think I mentioned in the book that, you know, it's almost like we're having roast pastor for lunch sometimes. And you know, I'm an ordained minister, and I've been in church as a minister, and nobody's perfect. We all make mistakes, and people that are given, obviously, authority and leadership responsibilities even have a greater responsibility in that area to make sure they do things correctly. And in no means does that mean that our churches are doing things perfectly, nor our pastors, just like our supervisors, which we've been talking about the last half hour. So I look at that and I just say, first of all, remember whoever is your leader in your churches. I mean, they're human beings. They're not on a pedestal. They make mistakes. They need accountability. They need people speaking in their lives. They need people guiding them. Are you going to be one of those people that is going to be positive, speak into their life, help guide them, give them encouragement, or are you going to be somebody that tears them down? And that's how I look at it with all the leadership I work with. I've worked with a lot of people, just like you have, Bill, that some are awesome people, and some I never want to work for again. And in both sides, I still need to have an attitude of respect, which the Bible says I need to honor my leadership, but I don't need to always agree with them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, different churches have different methods for expressing dissent, you know, depending on the denomination, depending on the leadership structure. Sometimes, you know, you've got a committee structure. Sometimes it's very top down. What are the proper avenues if, let's say you're involved in a church and you believe there are some things going on that are inappropriate or unloving, that do not represent Christ well? We have the example in Matthew. How do we carry that forward in today's modern church structure?
Great question. I'll quickly say what we don't do is we don't put it in the church bulletin. And, you know, and we don't sit around with our group at choir, Sunday school, wherever it is, and talk about it, because that's not going to make a change. I think what we can do, first of all, is, and you mentioned it, every place is different. So I would say to an individual that's asking me that direct question, I'd say, what is the process in your church? Do you know the process? Have you asked the process? Because that's important. So you do need to go to one of your leaders or to an elder or a deacon or whatever the appropriate avenue is in your church and say, I have some questions about some things. What is the proper way of doing this? Do I put it in writing? Do I come and speak personally to someone? And that's something that's very, very important to find out so that you can follow the proper protocol in each of those areas. And I always tell people, Bill, and this is just me, so this is my perspective, and making that very clear to your listeners, if you don't get to a place to where you go through that whole process and you're not feeling satisfaction, you need to be praying and seeing, God, is this really where I'm supposed to be? I don't think anyone should be in a situation that they believe is illegal, immoral, unethical, or that you're being abused in some fashion. I don't advocate that at all in this case. I think we always need to have a place of saying, wait a minute, is it time for me to move on? But we also need to make sure that we're not just removing ourselves because something's uncomfortable.
Mm. Glad you mentioned that, because there are some churches that are toxic. And I'm thinking of Henry Cloud and John Townsend did a great book a few years ago called Safe People. And in that book, they have a whole chapter on the characteristics of a safe church or also an unsafe church. And you can kind of go through that checklist and say, am I seeing these things in my church, in my leadership? And if so, this is a place where maybe God does not want me to stay because it's unsafe and it's tearing me down. It's not helping me to grow as a believer. It's actually destructive to my Christian walk. And we hope and pray those churches are few and far between. But if you feel like you're in a church like that today, I would highly recommend you get the book Safe People. It will help you in a variety of ways, but that chapter in particular will maybe help you make that decision. Absolutely. Michael, let's talk about some biblical examples of what we might call evil reports and how they ended up really doing damage in Scripture.
And I love to, and I want to first mention, because you used that term that I used earlier as well, the evil reports. For your listeners, please understand that is a biblical phrase. Yes, it's strong. I agree it's strong, but it's biblical. And so this isn't one that Bill and I are using right now on the air just to make it sound melodramatic. The Bible clearly talks about negative conversations and gossip as evil reports. A couple that come to mind real quick, I mean, there's so many illustrations in the Bible of how negative conversations, evil reports, destroyed lives and brought people, they lost their lives, they lost their families. And the more I look at it, Bill, it's amazing. I can't read the Bible without stories jumping out to me. I mean, quickly, a couple of them, like Absalom and David, what a great example. Here, Absalom literally stole the kingdom, the Bible says, from his father. He stole the hearts of the people. He never raised a sword. He never killed anybody. He simply spoke negative about his father, David, and eventually turned the hearts of all of the nation against his father just by his words. Mm. That's how. I love the story, and not, I guess love's not the right word, but I think the illustration in 1 Kings, it talks about Ahab and Jezebel and how they wanted the vineyard of Naboth. And Naboth had this little tiny vineyard next to the palace, and Ahab wanted it. And Naboth didn't want to sell it because it was his family's. It was his inheritance. And Jezebel ended up getting some people to say negative things about Naboth, accusing him of things that were incorrect, and they ended up killing him because of it. And once again, and then this, as the story ends, and Ahab gets the vineyard. And those kind of things happen all the time. People are fired from jobs. I mean, how many times do we accuse somebody on page one and then the retractions on page 15?
Oh, wow.
And over again, the Pharisees and Jesus, a classic example, over and over again of evil reports, negative conversations. The Pharisees throughout the entire New Testament, of the Gospels, are constantly attempting to undermine Jesus, not with a sword, not with weapons, except the weapon of their words. And they're saying stories and telling negative things about Jesus. And I think those are biblical examples of how people's lives can be destroyed or challenged through words. And there's many more: Korah, Moses, Joseph being thrown in. We could see her for a long time, and I could, you know, again, keep throwing out stories. And you said Joseph. I mean, how did Joseph end up where he ended up? By negative conversations from his brothers, from the baker, and, you know, from all those things. He just kept from the king's wife saying that he slept with her. All these stories were just words, but they ended up creating difficulties for people's lives.
Yeah, I was just thinking of even the crucifixion of Jesus, where it talks about the Pharisees stirring up the crowd.
Yes.
You know, to basically say we want Jesus crucified, and then Pilate goes along with them to placate them. So
yeah.
it wasn't like there was they weren't paying them. They weren't there was no violence committed. They just stirred up the crowd. They planted gossip. They had evil reports, and the crowd went with it. And we see the death of our Savior because of it. You talk about deception in the book. We've just got about 3 minutes left. Unpack that a little bit, and how we need to combat that as believers.
Deception is a tough one. I had someone come up to me one time, and it was a revelation for them. They had an epiphany, but they said to me, they said, "Mike, I just realized when you're in deception, you don't know it." And I laughed. I thought, isn't that the truth? And that problem with deception is that you don't know it. You think you have it down. You've justified your pride. You need to be right, and you think you have it down, but you don't know because you're in deception. So I talk about how important accountability is, and we even talked about churches. One of the questions I asked, I know my current pastor, when we first started going to the church many years ago, was when things aren't going well or you have a struggle, who do you go to? If you're not making a decision that's maybe effective, who can speak into your life? Who are you accountable to? And that's what I look at even in my life, Bill, and I hope in yours as well, and all your listeners. We've got to be accountable to people. I have two or three friends, along with my wife, that have permission that if I get off base, I've told them, if you see things you're concerned about, you need to tell me. And there have been several times throughout my many years of life now that I've had people literally, I would say, save my life because they've said, you know, Mike, it looks like you're saying this too much, or you're starting to do this, or you're acting this way. I'm a little concerned. So I think the whole area of deception is get some accountability, get some support, be willing to listen to other people and not just those people that agree with you.
I'm thinking of Jeremiah's words, "The heart is desperately wicked above all things. Who can know it?" And it just speaks to our proclivity towards self-deception and really, you know, fooling ourselves. And if we don't have those truth-sayers around us, we are going to really suffer. Well, Mike, thank you so much for your time today. I want to mention again the new book, Stopping Words That Hurt, Positive Words in a World Gone Negative. It's available from Chosen Books, one of the Baker Publishing imprints, and you can find out more about that book and Michael's other books by going to michaelsedler.com. Mike, thanks for your time. May the Lord continue to guide and direct you in your work and your ministry and your writing.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Bill. I appreciate it.
Well, that wraps things up for this hour. I'm Bill Meyer, and we are going to take a quick break. We've got AP News coming up. On the other side, the Faith Report, and then we'll take a close look at Israel on the Faith Radio Network.